It's Casting Couch, Season 1, Episode 9. Today we'll be talking about blackmailing Apple, George Hotz back in the news again, and ransomware getting sneakier than ever. I am Ryan, and joining me today is JJ.
Right from North Las Vegas.
Yeah. Working the strip out there.
I'm working it.
why don't you lead us off there, JJ?
So I guess the first article we'll talk about is the hacker who tried to blackmail Apple for $100,000.
Yes.
And it all starts out, this 22-year-old man claimed to have access to over 300 million iCloud accounts. Hmm. And he threatened to factory reset all the accounts unless Apple paid this ransom.
Okay.
So in March 2017, he claimed to be this spokesman for this hacking group called the Turkish Crime Family.
Okay, all right.
And so they had possession of 319 million iCloud accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And on April 7, 2017, he gave Apple this this deadline. He said, pay up $75,000 in cryptocurrency or $100,000 worth of iTunes gift cards.
Sorry, continue.
I'm not making this up. This is how it goes.
It's like the most scammer request ever.
I know.
Okay, continue.
And if they pay, he would in return, he says, give them like a copy of the stolen database.
Okay.
Or deleting it, that's what he would do.
Yeah.
And then the UK National Crime Agency just said he's like a fame-hungry cyber criminal and all this.
Yeah.
And so basically, we kind of already went over this, but he said like if Apple failed to meet the demands, he would remotely wipe the victim's Apple devices, factory reset their iCloud accounts, and dump the stolen database online.
Oof, jeez.
Okay. So, like, you know, it kind of has some weight to it if he's actually has what he's saying.
Yeah, true.
But so the NCA, the National Crime Agency, National Crime Unit, arrested this guy at his home and seized all his digital devices, including his phone, his computers, and hard drives, after Apple contacted law enforcement in both the UK and the US.
Okay, so have they, like, found him?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how to pronounce his name. It's, like, Kiram Albrecht. I'll put it in the comments. I don't know how to say it.
Okay.
But, yeah, they found him, and he's being... he was sentenced at the South Ward Crown Court and given a 2-year suspended jail term, full 300 hours of unpaid work in the neighborhood, and a 6-month electronic curfew.
Jeez. Okay. Oh my word.
That's and just, apparently he was asked and he told the NCA investigators that once you get sucked into cybercrime, it just escalates and it makes it interesting when it's illegal, adding, when you have power on the internet, it's like fame and everyone respects you and everyone is chasing that right now.
So I do kind of agree with that, because even like when I went and was researching the Capital One hack with Paige Thompson, there were so many, like, not overwhelmingly, but there were a lot of people who were stating their, like, respect for their hack and saying, like, oh yeah, like, I aspire to be like them because, like, this is so brave and blah blah blah. And I don't know, it was just I definitely saw that when I was researching, and yeah, to me that's weird, but I guess that kind of lines up with what he's saying. I mean, these people kind of live in infamy if they pull off a big enough hack, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I guess that brings up a whole nother discussion of whether they should even be named or not. But yeah, I definitely get what he's saying.
I just think it's interesting. He wants $100,000 in iTunes gift cards.
So. Yes, I know. That's it's like always the request. It's like either wire me money through Wells Fargo or give me gift cards.
I thought it was Western Union.
Oh yeah, Western Union. My bad. Oh my goodness, it's like the Nigerian prince scam. Oh man. Well, I'm glad they caught him. That's good.
Yeah.
So speaking of, I guess hackers and such, I want to go over George Hotz. So whether or not you know his name or not, I know you do, John, but if you don't know who he is, you might know some of the things that he's done. So at 17, he was the first reported person to carrier unlock an iPhone. So basically jailbreak, later known as towel root. It was like a one click rooting option for your iPhones back in the day. According to Hotz's blog, he also traded his second unlocked iPhone for a Nissan car and three more phones because it was such a monumental kind of milestone at the time.
Well, the big thing was for the longest time, Apple and AT&T had this deal. Mm-hmm. So iPhones could only be on AT&T's network.
Yeah.
And so because he carrier unlocked it, it could be on any other carrier.
Yep.
So people were like, oh, I want it on T-Mobile. I want it on this. So
exactly. It completely changed it. All these rich
people were fiending.
Yep. Yeah, it was a huge deal back in the day. And I mean, everyone's heard about, you know, rooting your devices and stuff like that. But this was huge. Like John said, it was carrier locked to just one company. So they had a deal going on. And he basically blew that out of the water, and they could just take it to whatever carrier they wanted. So it was a very big deal. He also cracked the security of PlayStation 3, and then posted it online. Sony announced that they had patched the vulnerability. So he again tried to breach the security software, but he gave up, saying that it was a little too difficult and he didn't have time. But a hacker group known as Fail Overflow, they took the groundworks that he had, finished his work. And it basically, their hack allowed users to run whatever software they wanted on the device. So Sony did retaliate with a lawsuit, and it was settled out of court. Basically, he agreed to never try to like hack Sony again. Coincidentally, though, soon after, someone did hack the PlayStation Network and stole information from 77 million users. Hotz was obviously blamed for this, but he completely denied it. And he stated, quote, running homebrew and exploring security on your devices is cool. Hacking into someone else's server and stealing databases of users is not cool. Powerful words. sounds like an anti-drug campaign of the 90s. But yeah, so he's done a lot. He also worked at a Facebook. He didn't like the way that they were going with a data privacy and expansion and stuff like that. So he actually left Facebook. He was also employed by Google on their Project Zero, which is it was founded in 2014 by Google to find zero-day vulnerabilities in software and devices that their customers use. So finding bugs and finding anything that's hackable, anything that can be exploited by criminals and the like. So he was on that team. He also left there a little while later. He also started a company called Comma.ai. With Comma.ai, he developed a self-driving car software. He even built a self-driving 2016 Acura, which he demonstrated by obviously hopping on the highway and letting it drive itself. And he took a video of it and posted it online, which promptly received a cease and desist letter from California Department of Motor Vehicles. Who then later sent him a letter asking him to prove that his software complied with vehicle safety standards, and even spoke with Elon Musk, who offered to buy his software. He didn't end up buying it because Hotz tweeted that the project was shut down a day after the California Department of Motor Vehicles sent him the letter. But he did make the software open source, and the company is still running. And you can also try it. You can try out this self-driving car for 30 or self-driving car software for 30 days. It is $600 after 30 days. However, the interesting thing that I find about this is just an add-on. It's called the Eon Dev Kit, and it just plugs into your car. So you don't have to like install cameras or whatever. It does have to be there's only certain models of cars that are compatible. Because it uses the onboard cameras and basically watches where you're looking and stuff like that, and is able to use the radar that's already on the car to basically drive itself and stay in its lane. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Now, the Comma.ai is really interesting because, unlike other traditional self-driving cars that have strict rules of, oh, I have to, you know, do this and blah, 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 from my understanding, it was based off of artificial intelligence and would watch how humans drive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, you know, some of us drive crazy, so it's not the greatest idea, but it was just a different approach at how to do it. And so from my understanding, it just uses like a, it's similar to an Android smartphone.
Yeah.
And it just kind of plugs into your, like, I believe it's like your OBD2 port.
Yep. Yep.
And the fact that he was able to make a working prototype, it's actually pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
To think that a bunch of phones, you just plug it in and your Toyota Corolla could be self-driving.
Yeah, and he has videos of it working all over. I found at least like a dozen of them on YouTube of people using the software, or George himself just driving around in these cars showing that it actually does work. So they have on their website, they have the stats of, they have, says 10 million miles driven with using this software. It is kind of impressive. It's, I don't know. And the fact that it's open source and stuff like that for people to add on to it. And so it's, I don't know. I think it's really impressive.
Yeah, because I'm reading it right now. It says it has adaptive cruise control and automated lane centering mm-hmm. on the highway and stop and go traffic, which, yeah. you know, would actually be quite nice.
yeah. Yeah, if I could not think about driving to work, that'd be nice. but yeah, so it is $600, but I thought that was pretty interesting and definitely, I don't know, definitely something pretty cool that he's done. But Hotz doesn't seem to be a big fan of companies, though. He believes that humans aren't doing enough with their lives and says that when you own a company or you work at a company, you only lose. And he says you get more money, but for what? He said you win, quote unquote, by selling your company, but no one really wins. You just pass it off to someone else. So he's not a huge fan of companies, which we'll play in later, because the main reason I want to talk about him in a recent interview, he was kind of given like a little TED talk type thing. He thinks that we live inside a simulation and that we're basically inside a like alien video game, not necessarily alien, but like, he believes,
sounds like that Rick and Morty episode.
So he, funny you mentioned that. He actually uses that as a talking point, and says that that's basically how we're run, like the Rick and Morty simulation, which is an episode.
Yes.
Roy, a life well lived or whatever, that video game.
My man,
exactly. but no, in the Blitz and Chips video game, that's what he's referring to, the Roy video game. He also uses an analogy of a tiger in the zoo, saying that like the tiger doesn't really know that it's in a cage, and the zookeepers are obviously smarter than the tiger, so they keep the tiger fat and happy, and you know, it just kind of stays inside its cage. But there's so much more outside that it doesn't even know exists. So that's kind of his point about it, I guess. Mm-hmm. He was like super broad with what he was saying. I don't even know if he believes it really himself. Because, I mean, he even says, he says some days I believe this is completely true, and the other days I'm like, maybe it's not. So, like, he was just kind of spitballing and just throwing stuff out. But I thought it was pretty interesting.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because I want to say other people that we regard with such high, like...
esteem?
Yeah, esteem, you know, just in high regard, I guess. Like, yeah. Elon Musk, has mentioned he believes that we're in a simulation.
Yes. yes, I've heard that before as well.
It makes you wonder, what do these people know that we don't?
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know if they've just been, you know, spending too much time behind a computer, but...
he did hit that blunt on the Joe Rogan podcast.
This is true, yeah. the government's watching you. So
I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little retarded.
Whoa, different podcast.
Oh,
different episode, different episode. but he made a point where if we were Mario, right, and we were inside our, you know, our virtual reality or whatever, inside our simulation. He said Mario, if Mario became self-aware in his game, he could start doing quote Mario science and find a way to hack out of the game. So basically, if Mario became self-aware and was smart enough to, I guess, try to break the code that he was written into, Mario could eventually get out of his game and hack out of the game. I don't know how that works. That's a little out there for me.
Sounds like the Matrix.
yeah, exactly. So he wants to start a church around this this religion, I guess, because he says he likes churches and how they run better than how companies run. because there's not like a bunch of overhead and you don't sell, you know, you have to sell companies and keep them afloat and stuff like that. Whereas if you run a church, it's a lot easier. I don't know. It was a little crazy.
Well, Elon Musk kind of has a similar thing. Not a church. Mm-hmm. I want to say that right now. I don't want people getting confused. But he definitely prefers companies that are private than the ones that are public.
Yeah, because
that's his big problem with Tesla is he has to cater to the shareholders and like, hey, we made this much profit this quarter.
Yeah. When
actually that short-term like seeking for profit actually hurts their long-term goals.
Mm-hmm.
Where SpaceX, he isn't a public company. He's a private company, kind of does whatever he wants.
Yeah, exactly.
And it actually gets some great success. Like they just launched their Dragon capsule or whatever to the ISS.
Mm-hmm. In that regard, I definitely agree that obviously, you know, private companies, you have more freedom to do what you want, and that's great. But starting a church around
a simulation
idea, it's a little different. But he went on to say that programming is like magic, and if you write the correct program, you could rule the world.
And it's quantum physics.
Yeah, exactly. And he went into this a little bit, and he said nature is our moderator, basically, in our world, because, you know, we have the laws of physics and the laws of nature and stuff, and they can't be broken. And he says because they can't be broken, they're tyrannical. And so ultimately, he wants power over nature because then he has essentially won the game, I guess. And his basis for all of this is you can't disprove it, so you can't say it's false. That's his argument for it.
I'm saying when you start looking at quantum physics, stuff gets really weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that's really where like all the stuff that we consider magic is going to come from in the future. Like,
yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. I mean,
do I believe we're in a simulation? I don't know.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. Just me personally, I don't really
think. That's a pretty advanced supercomputer we're in, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it would have to be a lot. Like, yeah, it would be pretty amazing, the technology behind it, if we were actually in a simulation.
I don't want to take this off rails, but we could start talking about Dyson spheres and everything like that.
Dyson spheres?
Yeah, Dyson spheres. They're like these theoretical structures that collect all the energy a star produces.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What about them?
Oh, some people say that, you know, if there is advanced civilizations out there.
That they would have that?
Yeah, and they were talking about there's this dark spot in the universe, and we're like, why is there one spot that's dark? And they were saying if you had all this power, you could do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard that.
I don't want to get too in depth on it. This ain't the right podcast for that.
This ain't the NASA podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean that is interesting, and I mean if we could do something like that, I mean eventually that would be pretty amazing, and we would
our problem. I will say quantum computers are going to make a big shift in our technology. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, normal computers aren't going to be replaced just because of how quantum computers work.
Yeah, I was looking up one of the videos, and they were saying that as of now, there is no such thing as a fully functioning quantum computer, I guess, because they have to build it for a specific task. Like, every one of them has to be built for a specific task. You can't just, it's not like building a computer, like a normal computer, and then you can use it to, you know, whatever, do calculations or browse the web or whatever.
I'm gonna have to look into that, because I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that's what they were saying, that they can only build it for a specific task. So, like, they build it to run this one algorithm, and then, you know,
well, it so they do the use algorithm. Shor's algorithm, mm-hmm. But Shor's algorithm, from my understanding, is just a way they use, like, the qubits to, like, run different code and everything.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, because this stuff is, like, way over my head.
Oh, yeah, same here. As I said, I think I mentioned this in the last episode, but I tried. Well, yeah, I watched a few videos and read a few articles and stuff like that, listened to some speakers, and this stuff was just blowing me away. Just how these quantum computers work and what this will do in the future. I don't understand it either. I don't pretend to know a whole bunch about quantum computing, but just the potential that they talk about is just amazing. Anyway, that's a discussion for a smarter person.
we should have a podcast episode maybe where we just talk about crazy futuristic technology.
Yeah, I'd be down. There's some amazing stuff that's coming out. Back to George Hotz here.
Sorry about that.
He's a no worries. He's a he's a kind of an eccentric guy as well. If you didn't know, he makes rap music.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can find him on SoundCloud. His username is Tom Cruise, spelt with 2 zeros. He has a bunch of interesting music, I guess. Like one's just called Society. He made a diss track on Sony after they pulled that lawsuit against him. So just interesting stuff. I'll link to all that in the description. He has a GitHub profile where he posts a bunch of just a bunch of software if you want to look that up as well. Pretty useful stuff. He also has an Instagram account where he says he does rich people stuff. And then he also has a LinkedIn profile. And let me just read his about page. So he says, LinkedIn is too full of faux career climbers and not enough dating opportunities. While some people on LinkedIn are networking and advertising their personal brand, I use this site exclusively as a dating platform. If you are intelligent, attractive, and perhaps a bit out of the norm, I might be interested. Send me a message and invite me out for a drink. And please make it clear that you are asking me on a date. All non-dating related messages will be ignored. Also, if you cold call me and try to sell me something, I'll make sure we never use your product or service. It's not the 80s. There's many asynchronous ways of contacting people today. You are a phone spam everyone hates. So he has a very interesting LinkedIn, and apparently he accepts all follows and stuff like that. So if you want to follow him, it's pretty funny. He's just an interesting guy. He seems very, very laid back and just kind of open. And just he has a very humorous outlook on life, which I appreciate. But I don't know. I saw that it was from a different podcast. They mentioned his simulation theory or inside of video game theory, whatever you want to call it. And that got me looking into just a bunch of stuff that he's done. And obviously there's like the jailbreak stuff and a lot of people know about that. But yeah, he's just done so much more in recent years that I thought it was pretty interesting. Yeah, that's all I got on that. It's just a little tidbit for you to, you know, something to make you smile, I guess.
All right. So when talking about Apple, Apple, instead of being blackmailed, they're also doing something great. They used to have an invite only bug bounty program. Mm-hmm. And before you had to be invited and you had to be like kind of regarded as a good security researcher, from my understanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now they're opening it to everyone. As of December 20th, it's open to everyone, and they offer monetary rewards for anyone reporting vulnerabilities in iOS, macOS, watchOS, tvOS, iPadOS, and iCloud to the company.
Really?
Wow. Yes.
That's new. That's huge.
Yeah, so for 3 years, they've had this program, but it's only been for invitation only, like we're talking about.
Yeah, it's very exclusive.
The head security engineer and architecture at Apple, Yvonne Krstic, He announced how they were extending the bug bounty program, and so they were increasing the maximum reward from $200,000 to $1.5 million.
Jeez.
Like I said, they're accepting bug reports for all of its operating systems and latest hardware, and they're opening it to all researchers.
Wow. Okay. So any, you know, Joe Schmo hacker or whatever that wants to make some loose change can try to hack or find bugs in Apple products then?
Oh, yes, means? But there's certain rules to get certain tiers of the rewards, if that makes any sense. So I'll kind of go over like an example.
Yeah, please.
So even after submitting it, they need to make sure they follow the eligibility rules for receiving the rewards, which includes reporting details directly to Apple security team without revealing anything to the public. Okay. Until the company releases a patch and providing a clear report with a working exploit. But to receive like the $1.5 million reward, the $1 million reward will be awarded only to those who submit a severely deadly, zero-clickable kernel code execution exploit that could enable complete, persistent control of a targeted device. And so that's only for $1 million. But Apple will also offer a 50% bonus to those who find and report vulnerabilities in their pre-release beta versions before they become public. So that brings it up to the 1.5.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So you have to find a vulnerability in the actual kernel, like the actual meat and potatoes.
That's for the highest reward. Obviously, Like, they have a list of a bunch of other stuff. Like, a network attack, if you get a one-click remote kernel code execution, that's 150,000. So, basically, the rewards are based off the severity of the attack. So, like, unauthorized iCloud account access is only 25,000. Mm-hmm. And then, say, if you want, like, this network attack without user interaction, that's anywhere between 50 to 250,000. You know, just based off the severity, the rewards increase. And then if it's in the beta program, you get that 50% bonus as well.
Still, I mean, that's a lot of money.
I wouldn't mind 105 bones. I mean, 1.5 million bones.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that would be for a very, very severe vulnerability in the actual kernel of the device, the meat and potatoes of the software. But yeah, I mean, even 25 grand, geez, just for finding vulnerability in an account, like logging into an account, that's pretty big.
Some people live off this stuff. Like there was, it was either Vice or Bug Bounty. They were following this guy around, and he went to prison before, but now he just does these bug bounties and makes a living off of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you could if you're good enough. I mean, just think about it. If you got two of those, like a $150,000 one and a $25,000 one, that's what, maybe a couple months of work, like trying to figure out vulnerabilities.
Well, it depends on how good you are, I guess.
Well, exactly, yeah. But I mean, if you're decent at hacking or whatever, take you a couple months to find some good vulnerabilities. You bring that up to the company, you have a freaking year's worth of a very nice salary right there.
Oh yeah, I mean, say if you're able to do like six of those a year, you could have like retirement real quick.
Exactly. Be like John McAfee living in South America.
Oh, we should talk about him next time.
Oh, I plan to. He's an interesting character.
We should get some sound bites of some of his eccentric comments or something.
Oh my goodness, there's so many just hilarious interviews with him and stuff. Oh man,
that is. We should see if we can get him on the podcast. What do you think?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I don't want to be nah.
Here, don't worry, we'll use VPNs and everything.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, let's get Snowden on here too.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'll go into my next story though.
Okay.
This is it's about Snatch ransomware. And Snatch ransomware it's kind of been around for a minute, but there's been a interesting new variant to it.
Okay.
And what it does is it first reboots infected computers into safe mode and then encrypts the victim's files to avoid like any antivirus detection.
Okay.
Yeah, unlike traditional malware, the new Snatch ransomware chooses to run in safe mode because in diagnostic mode, it loads minimal drivers and services, and usually antivirus isn't running and everything like that.
Yeah. And I know a lot of antiviruses have stepped up their game and started combating a lot of ransomware. So, yeah, that would kind of just defeat every single one of those antiviruses that has now updated to defend against the newer ransomware. If it's not even running, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so this was discovered by Sophos Labs. Okay. So it's S-O-P-H-O-S. I don't know how to say it. So it's detected in the summer of 2018, and that's when they spotted this kind of safe mode enhancement to that ransomware strain.
Yeah.
So they were been exploring that. And then basically, once the computer comes back after rebooting in safe mode, the malware uses a Windows component net.exe to stop super backup man service.
Okay.
And then uses the Windows component vssadmin.exe to delete all the volume shadow copies on the system to prevent any kind of forensic recovery of the files encrypted. Wow. So it's pretty thorough. I was like, ooh, this would be kind of deadly.
Goodness. Do they know who made it or who's behind it?
It doesn't say in the article who made it, but
probably don't know. Jeez. That's pretty crazy. Cause there's some websites and stuff that you can go to that'll try to recover your files if you have ransomware.
Yeah. Cause some of them are sloppy and they leave the keys like in some random folder or something.
Yeah, exactly. Or they don't encrypt everything. So you can kind of break into it that way. Or, like you said, with the shadow copies, you can just clone them basically and just reimage your hardware or your hard drive and you'll be fine. So like, yeah, a lot of them, there's a lot of workarounds for it, but this seems
Well, it was also saying that in addition to being ransomware, it's also a data stealer. So it has this sophisticated data stealing module mm-hmm. that allowed the attackers to steal like information from like target organizations and stuff like that.
Wow. Okay. So is this, do they know how this is being distributed, or they just know that it exists? Have they seen it like in the wild, or?
I believe they have seen it in the wild.
Okay. So it's already being distributed.
Yeah. Saying like cyber criminals and rogue employees and stuff like that.
Wow. Okay.
It doesn't have any specific group. I was trying to see if there's like any specific group affiliated with it.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking about how like once they gain like access, they can like get various credentials
mm-hmm.
That these like criminals are using. And I was talking about how like they use like IOBit uninstaller and Power Tool and PS Exec and all these other tools.
Jeez.
They typically try to use them to disable like antivirus products.
Yeah. Yeah. But now they don't even need to do that. Just restart the machine and save them.
And there's this company called Coveware. It says a company that specializes in extortion negotiations between attackers and ransomware victims told Sophos that they negotiated with the Snatch criminals on 12 occasions between July and October 2019 on behalf mm-hmm. of their clients,
mm-hmm.
with ransom payments ranging between $2,000 to $35,000 in Bitcoin.
So what do those negotiating companies do?
This is the first time I've actually heard about them, so I was actually going to do some more research on it later.
Yeah,
but I imagine they're just kind of like a middleman to help facilitate.
Huh. Yeah, we should talk about that in the future, because I've never heard of a negotiating team for a ransom.
I imagine they get a cut of it, you know.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. But I just wonder, like, what's their function? Like, are they try to talk them down on numbers, or are they trying to like find out who they are or trace them back? You know what I mean? Like in a hostage yeah. negotiation or whatever, you're trying to get the hostage out, right? But like they just encrypted your hard drive and they said, "Hey, give us money." Like what more can you do besides just, you know, wipe your stuff, or hopefully you have backup somewhere? I mean, obviously don't pay them. Never pay a freaking ransom. Usually half the time they won't even unlock your stuff after you pay it.
So it says like, apparently Coveware on their websites, they have extortion negotiation and ransom settlement. So they're saying they have professional 24/7 case managers that negotiate on your behalf, and they focus on managing your recovery while working within your timeline and trying to ensure both the ransom amount and risk are minimized. And
that is so weird.
So I guess they're like, "Hey, well, you know, we'll work with you, but you're probably still gonna have to pay." Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Apparently, so they try weird. To also try and decrypt it and stuff like that. Like, okay. They'll do a free assessment, it says.
Okay. Well, that would be helpful. And so maybe they have some, like, digital forensic teams that try to, like, recover yeah. your stuff. That would be helpful. I could see people paying for that, especially companies.
Well, I know data loss in general. Like, if your RAID goes down, people mm-hmm. pay tons of money for that.
Yeah, true. That's a lot of lost revenue if their servers go down.
I had a RAID go down, and I reached out, and they're like, "Yeah, it's going to be $35,000. And I'm like, "Nope, I'm not paying that." It wasn't that important.
Wait, you got ransomware?
Oh, no. It's just one of my it was actually my fault. I wiped a drive on accident.
Oh.
Too many drives for the...
Oh, you're talking about forensic recovery.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought you got ransomed. I was like, "Dang, what kind of sites are you going on?"
And just wait, you know, I'm going to make a video showing how to get to them.
Oh, no. When Hood Rat Tech comes out?
Yeah. You know, I'm just polishing it up, you know.
I look forward to it.
But yeah, other than that, that's all I got about the Snatch okay. ransomware. And
No, that's good to know. And definitely, I mean, my personal advice, if you do get like some sort of ransomware, obviously don't pay it half the time. They won't unlock your stuff anyways. And I mean, unless you're a freaking company or whatever and you need it back and you can hire some third party thing like this. There's plenty of websites out there. I think Bitdefender runs a website as well that helps with, it'll scan what kind of ransomware you have, and it'll try to either decrypt it if it was implemented sloppily, or, you know, just there's a lot of tools you can use before you know, pay whatever to these people. Cause if you pay them, they're just going to do it more.
Yeah, I think it's also important just to state, like, if you have backups, you basically ruin any kind of leverage they have on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, if you have somewhat recent backups and you can afford to lose, say, your latest little bit of whatever,
mm-hmm.
you minimize your downtime, and they have no leverage because
really
how it works is they ransom your stuff. You don't have backups, and you're like, crap, we have all these files and everything, and we don't want it to go just down the drain. So that's how they end up extorting you to pay the money.
And, I mean, if you're a company, obviously you should be having regular backups anyways. But even if you're at home, I mean, NASs aren't that expensive. You can get a little NAS box. I mean, you can get a five. I got a 5 terabyte hard drive for what, $40 off of like Amazon, and you just plug it up to your router. You know, plug it in, and you just have automatic up or automatic backups going. And there you go. You never have to think about it because it just happens automatically.
Mm-hmm.
It's really useful. It's very, very useful. But yeah, I had to wipe my hard drive when I had a motherboard failure, and I had a backup, so it was fine. Like I lost.
You wipe your hard drive.
Yeah. The freaking when I moved recently, my motherboard crapped out, and my hard drive somehow got affected by that. I don't know if it shorted out or what happened to it, but it was pretty bad. So I finally recovered the hard drive and got that working again after tinkering around with it for a little bit. But yeah, I had to wipe everything off of it, so it was
interesting.
It wasn't good, but I had backups, so it wasn't too bad. I only lost
moral
like half
of the story.
Yeah, moral of the story. I lost like half of it rather than all of it. So it was I was thankful for that anyways. Alright, well, I think we'll wrap it up there then. You know, have fun in your simulation, everyone.
My man.
Looking good.
Yes.
we'll see you on the other side.